Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Island Talk Show, a free space to discuss different developments in Muslim-majority countries and beyond. This is our 17th episode, and we're happy to have with us Professor Pradana Boyzulian from Indonesia, who is an associate professor of Islamic law from the University of Muhammadiyah in Indonesia. Dr. Pranada, very happy to have you with us.
Hello, Tasneem. It's great. And thanks very much for having me in this very special occasion. Hopefully our discussion will be fruitful.
Yeah.
And many things we can discuss very on important issues.
Yes.
Regarding Muslim majority countries, especially in Indonesia.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us. For our audience, Dr. Pradana is actually our ILN Indonesia fellow, and we first established contact with him in our very last ninth conference, which took place in Mardin in Turkey. He contributed with a very important paper, and he actually after that wrote a very touching article for all of us in the ILN team. It's entitled The New Hope for Moderation. It's there on our website, islamandlibertynetwork.org, where he talked about the work that we're doing. So thank you again for that article. Today we're going to be discussing something very important, which is the challenge of progressive Islamic thought in Indonesia. And before we start, could you define, the notion of, being progressive as far as Islamic thought is concerned? And then we will delve deeper into the Indonesian context.
Okay. Thanks very much once again, Tasneem, for having me in this conversation. So before we start discussing about the future of progressive Islamic thought in Indonesia, a bit background about Indonesia is that Indonesian Islam is mostly known as its moderate faith.
Mm-hmm.
But then the moderate phase of Islam in Indonesia is only one phase among many phases that Islam Indonesia has. So this because Indonesia is a majority Muslim countries.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, to our current figure, the most populous Muslim country on the globe is
You're
Indonesia.
Absolutely right. Yes.
So within this context, so we have diversity of thought within Muslim themselves. For
mm-hmm.
example, we have those who are progressive, those who are conservative, those
mm-hmm.
who are considered liberal, those who are considered maybe radical. So
right.
many terms are used to describe how our Indonesian Islamic thought exists. So
mm-hmm.
among those many terms, of course, I agree with you that we have to first time establish what actually we mean by certain concept. For
right.
example, to some people, maybe liberal and progressive are on par, but
yeah.
to some people, maybe not. So for me, I myself believe that liberal is the most extreme end for progressivism. So while progressivism means
in the middle,
right. and actually the idea behind progressivism is we practice Islam which is not in accordance with dynamic and the progress of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because Islam is a cosmopolitan religion,
yeah.
Quran contains global conception, which for me, the global conception stipulated within the Quran is actually a justification that Islam can be practiced anywhere and anytime.
Mm-hmm.
So I would define progressivism as first is the idea of adjusting Islam with the progress of time.
Okay.
And Islam does not block a certain time as I mean whatever the time goes on, progress, so that's Islam always present there. The second one, progressive thought in Islam is characterized by openness,
right?
The openness to accept any kind of changes, because we can see that from the time Prophet to Caliphate to the dynasty, to the great dynasty in Islam, to the great what we call golden age of Islam.
Right.
So one keyword is change. So it was always change from time to time.
I mean, so, even in our time frame, without even going back to different ages in the past, even in our own time, Islam in Tunisia is not exactly Islam in Indonesia. I'm not talking about the pillars, but you know the cultural outcome. Which is unique in a religion, right?
So the openness to change is one thing that characterizes the progressive Muslim. And the openness to new ideas. Of course, not all new ideas are compatible with Islam, but some ideas we can see in accordance with Islamic teaching, be it coming from the West or not, but in some concept we can see universality of the concept or values. So to me, openness to some kind of this, at least these three traits, characterize what I call progressive thought in Islam, in Indonesian context.
Impressive. So so when I asked you about what we want to talk about in this session, you added the word challenge to progressive Islamic thought. I mean, for us, I mean, not only in Tunisia, but in different Muslim majority countries, the challenge is that we're not progressive. We're either too liberal or we're conservative. So I didn't quite get the fact that, you know, being progressive could be a challenge in Indonesia. It shouldn't be a problem. So how is that happening in Indonesia?
Okay, so I draft some point. I can say the challenge. Why being progressive Muslim or exhibit or adopting progressive thought in understanding Islam is a challenge in Indonesian context. There are four things that I would like to propose.
Okay.
The first one
because normally it's a good thing, you know, to be progressive.
Because of the confusion between progressivism and liberalism. If for example I claim myself, I'm happier to be claimed or to be labeled as progressive rather than liberal, but then if I call myself progressive, then people will say, yeah, progressivism and liberalism basically the same thing. It's parallel. I see in Indonesian context, maybe progressivism is not always referring to the positive one. That's why I call it challenge. We have challenge. So I figure out there are four challenges that can be we can see as hindrance, or maybe can be some challenge for Islamic progressive Islamic thought in Indonesia. The first one is Islamic literacy populism, what I call Islamic literacy populism. Why I identify this? Because living in an age where any kind of information can be easily obtained, to some extent it brings easiness for us. To some other extent, it also creates difficulties. The difficulties is that no more control. Anybody can have access to information, not only to have information, but to post information.
Right.
And we can see, because anybody and post any information, how do we validate that some information is true and some information yes. is wrong?
It could be misleading.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I call this Islamic literacy populism. If we talk about populism in political sense, you can see populism is like something negative. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The idea behind populism is the control of public to everything. Everything can be right if public behind that.
Yes.
The idea. Yeah. In fact, it's wrong. But if public support it, so it's become right. So it's the basic idea of populism that I understood. I call it Islamic literacy populism. Mean more and more people can get information about religion, about Islamic thinking, about law, about Islamic law, about Sharia, everything through the internet, which is not all kind of information on the internet are validated.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Discrete Islamic progressivism. Why I said so? Because the progressive thinkers would not say something without reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And the reflection is something absent from Islamic literacy populism. And then a progressive Muslim will not say something without referring back to the fact,
be it the source as well, mentioning theory, the sources,
history,
yeah.
theory, history. And this is something that I cannot see within the wave of Islamic literacy populism in Indonesia. So it's okay. Silence. It's do you agree if I said it's a challenge?
Of course. Now it has become clear to me that it is a challenge. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
The second one, I'm eager to
the
know.
The second one is the contestation of religious authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of easiness to gain information, including something related to legal profession, legal studies, or something related to Sharia.
Right.
So those who only read something from the internet feel that they are already mastering everything about Sharia.
Yes.
This is an example that I experienced by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was a supervisor for a group of propagation students. So within my university, the University of Muhammadiyah in Malang, yes. Indonesia, we have so many student activities unit, and one of the units called student da'wah, something like that.
Yes.
And then they actually consist of many faculties and field of studies, and the fact is not too many students from Islamic studies background are joining this
okay.
unit. One day, they proposed a proposal to me, saying that, "Professor, we want to have this kind of activities, and the activities is Q&A about Sharia."
Okay.
I was very surprised. How can you propose such kind of idea, while Q&A in Sharia is something that can only be performed by expert, by mufti, yeah. high level Sharia scholars, and then is it? So I asked them, who will be the mufti in the activities you are doing? You will be doing, and then they, we, and they refer to themselves, and then
yeah, yeah, and they're students.
Yes. I'm a student of mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, economics, mathematics, anything, non-religious studies students. And then I said, on what basis are you all feeling that you have authority and capacity to do this kind of activities, Q&A on Sharia? And the answer was very surprising, even shocking for me, because they said, we studied through internet. This is very, very, very micro, but on the macro level, we can also somebody who just suddenly become expert and challenge authority of established authority within the in Indonesian context within two major organization, Muhammadiyah and Nahdlatul Ulama.
They have courage
to challenge the authority of Muhammadiyah scholars. They have they dare to challenge the authority of Nahdlatul Ulama scholars.
They said no, of course. Goes without saying.
They are confident enough. While I'm studying Sharia from long time and still feel that halal haram is something very big.
Absolutely.
They cannot be decided by one person. So this I call contestation of religious authority, both on macro, micro level.
I see. So they're trivializing, you know, the knowledge that, you know, people can get from muftis, from, respected universities. Anyone can just read anything online and they just become, you know, scholars, basically.
That's the feeling. So this is really, really
dangerous. It's happening excessively in Indonesia. That's what you're saying.
I don't know in other part of Muslim Muslim politics or Muslim countries, but this is something that really, really obvious we see in Indonesia. Even among young generation, they dare to challenge the authority of senior scholars, senior ulama.
Let me just you know, play the devil's advocate here. So wouldn't some people disagree with you and tell you, but that's good that they're, you know, interested in the first place in these matters and they dare to question and ask and stuff. So maybe we can strike a difference between, you know, being interested in Islamic thought and asking questions and between claiming to have answers. Is that what you're criticizing?
Interesting to Islamic knowledge, the Islamic Sharia, everything is okay. But then if they interest, that usually newly interest and just newly start their study in religion, and suddenly they claim they have authority, challenging the established authority, long established authority.
Second challenge. What about the third challenge?
The third one, I would say, in relation to the contestation of religious authority, we also see what Johnny Halls, an American writer, author, calls the death of expertise.
So very anybody self-explanatory.
Everybody become expert in religion, anybody become expert on Islamic thought. So one day when I did my PhD in Singapore, I met Indonesian, the crowd of Indonesian who actually professional in engineering. They all work in Singapore. And during our time of gathering, I got for me it's like, maybe embarrassing question because they asked me, what are you studying? And then I say, I studied sociology of Islamic law. But why you studied Islamic law in National University of Singapore, which very they say it's kafir university. And then the idea is not about kafir or not, but they have expert in there. No, what I mean is they one of them said to me, oh, what for you studying religion? We are engineer and we can just study a religion by closing our eyes. So they say that studying religion is very easy, but why you have to spend your PhD, that some people say PhD is permanent head damage. you do PhD in religion only, while religion is something very easy to study, they call it.
Right.
So this for me is an initial expression of the death of expertise. I'm not a member of Padia, which is one of largest Islamic movement in Indonesia, maybe people easily challenge my opinion about religion, even if I study religion from undergraduate, master and PhD, and even before university student, I also already study Islamic law. So this is kind of why is it so? Because the depth of expertise is also everywhere, and it is part of the dynamic that we have in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And the last one is about the first about politics. I mean, the strengthening of identity politics sometimes cannot be separated from the idea of conservatism. So, in Indonesian context, we can see the rise of identity politics actually, identity politics is not something specifically refers only to Islam.
Yes,
any political group can be tracked in political identity or identity politics. But then, in the context of Islam, they use they offer a version of Islamic understanding that tend to be not authoritative but authoritarian. So if any group or anybody following or exhibit other version of this political group, they will be deemed as invalid.
Right.
So, yeah. So to me, it's like this kind of politics is also about power and knowledge. I myself understood power and knowledge, or knowledge of power, etc., can be understood in two meanings for me. Yeah? The first one is that power can determine knowledge.
Right.
And yes. Second one is, and if we have knowledge, we can gain power.
Yeah.
But in Indonesian context, with referring to the politics, identity politics, and in specific reference to conservative or Islamic politics, what I can say is they tend to use power to create knowledge. And the power context. But the power here refers to a great popular support. I propose.
Yeah. So now that you've explained it, it's clear how it's a challenge. Progressive Islamic thought in Indonesia. The very next obvious question is: do you have any solutions for that to change the situation? Is it happening in other Muslim majority countries that you are aware of, and they faced it and they countered it, or it's something uniquely for Indonesia, and maybe you have some solutions that you want to suggest?
Yeah, I think this happened to maybe not in most Muslim countries. They face some this identical challenge. What I can see from Malaysia, maybe our Malaysian fellow can share about this, but what I can see at glance, we actually are facing a similar challenge. So, not about solution, but I have an impression that actually we still have future. I'm confident in saying that progressive thought in Indonesia still has future. My conviction is based on, first, because we have so many moderate Islamic educational institutions, ranging from high school to university. I don't know whether you are familiar with the concept of pesantren is Islamic boarding. We have so many Islamic boarding school, which actually educating our young generation with moderate Islamic thought. Of course, yes. If you talk about pesantren or Islamic boarding school, we have so many kinds. There are kind of maybe Salafi Islamic boarding school, but in general, moderate one are still dominated. And right. Also we have universities. We have so many Islamic universities. For example, we have state Islamic universities almost in every city in huh. Indonesia. Both from state on or from non-state agency, they also offer education in Islamic thought in universities. For example, Muhammadiyah, where I associate, and also Nahdlatul Ulama, these two big Islamic organizations, they also run many Islamic universities that yeah. I'm sure that these two organizations or Islamic movement offer moderate Islamic thinking or teach moderate yes. Islamic yeah. thinking. And okay, that's my conviction. That's my confidence that we still have future.
Yes.
And the second basis is, again, we have two big organizations, Muhammadiyah and Nahdlatul Ulama.
Yes.
Many.
You realize this is very unique to Indonesia, because in the rest of Muslim majority countries, we do not have such big organizations yeah. with such great influence on the society.
Yeah. I acknowledge it, because one day, my friend asked me about, my foreign friend asked me about, are Muhammadiyah and Nahdlatul Ulama are political parties? And then I said, no. But how can, if these two are not political parties, how can they influence the policy of a state?
Yes.
And this is, as you said, this is one uniqueness of Indonesian society or yes. Indonesian Islam. Although Muhammadiyah and Nahdlatul Ulama are not political parties, but I can say confidently that almost all political policies will not be decided without involvement of Muhammadiyah and Nahdlatul Ulama.
So, that's impressive. So, yeah.
Broadly speaking, scholars identify that Muhammadiyah is a modern Islamic organization and Nahdlatul Ulama is traditional Islamic organization.
Okay.
But to me, this is in the past. In our time now, actually, we can see the convergence between these two.
Mm-hmm.
Because more and more young generation within Nahdlatul Ulama are educated in, let's say, modern center of learning in the West.
Okay.
And so they bring something like
ideas.
New ideas and modernize Nahdlatul Ulama. So
you're not against that.
Yeah, there is convergence between these two.
Okay.
So if these two organizations is still strongly exist in still in existence in Indonesia, I believe we still have future about progressive Islamic thought. Actually,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is the. And the last one, my conviction is about the diaspora. So many young generation, young Muslim generation are diaspora,
and all over the world. Yeah,
all of the world. Some of them coming back to Indonesia. Some of them just stay there for maybe for the rest of their life.
Yes.
But the idea is this diaspora has exposed them to difference, and thanks to the information technology, then the idea can be accessed by young generation in Indonesia. So of course, the dialectic, what we can say, the dialectic between this pro-progressive and contra-progressive will always there, but in addition to challenges, we still have future.
Still have hope. Point.
Yeah, that's
really impressive. That's really impressive, and I think that the kind of, you know, issues that you have, being just in the kind of how it's progressive and how it has, it could have some negativity in it. I mean, here in Tunisia and other parts of the Muslim world, we don't even enjoy the fact that some of our youth are interested in the first place in Islamic thought. The fact that your youth are interested in, you know, Islamic thought, even though they might claim to be experts, they might just learn from the internet, there's always room to correct them, you know? Yeah. But in other Muslim majority countries, they're not even interested in that in the first place. They're too they're too secularized. They're too, you know, they're literally like the West, you know? So how do you, and maybe this is the last question, how do you advise, you know, people in Muslim majority countries with youth that are not interested at all in Islamic thought, and they're all they think about is the West, and they're not really, you know, deeply rooted in their religion and the aspects of their religion?
If they are not interested in Islamic knowledge or knowledge about Islam, but then they don't pretend to be expert and they don't challenge the established authority, that's mm-hmm. defined. The problem is, the problem we have in Indonesia is because too many people are interested in deepening their Islamic knowledge. But mm-hmm. at a certain point of their study, and then they dare to challenge established authority. For me, right. It's free. It's part of our freedom to study everything.
Yes.
But then, if the study of something is meant to be to challenge somebody's or any group's authority, yeah, I think that's not good. So not interested. So it's easy.
Okay. Maybe if they're challenging them in a respectful way, would you tolerate that? Because, you know, the authority shouldn't necessarily, you know, remain authority forever. I mean, new minds emerge and things happen. So you're just against those who are not knowledgeable enough about the, you know, Islamic thought that they dare challenge the existing authority. But you're okay for someone who's knowledgeable enough and expert to challenge the authority. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I mean, challenge authority is something very rude, and for I can see the point between there is a relations between knowledge and attitude. If
yes.
you are knowledgeable, so you can control your attitude.
Should be humble.
The problem
yeah.
is the more knowledgeable people, the more humble they will be.
Absolutely, this is how things should be. Yeah.
Yeah, but what I describe here is those who have shallow knowledge about Islam,
mm-hmm.
and then they feel that the shallowness of their or the limit of their knowledge, because of the limit of their knowledge, they believe that this is the whole thing already.
Yeah, they become defensive. Yeah. I see your
defensive
point.
And also aggressive toward others.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
mm-hmm.
if mm-hmm. challenge somebody's authority in terms of offering different opinion, that's fine.
Yes.
And for me, different is something cannot be undeniable thing, but in dealing with difference, one ethic that I always advocate to my student, to my circle, is when people already understand where they stand and
yes.
what the basis of their understanding, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Don't force
mm-hmm.
them to follow our understanding. Don't force them to follow our principle, because we build our understanding based on our principle, and they build their understanding based on their principle. As
mm-hmm.
long as they understand what they are doing, what they are thinking, on what basis their knowledge or their action are based, that's perfect for me.
Makes sense. Well, Doctor, thank you very much. I mean, I hope our audience has benefited as much as I did from this very informative talk. Thank you so much again for being with us, and we're very proud to have you as our Indonesian
My
fellow.
Pleasure.
Thank you, and see you again soon on another topic in the Island Talk Show.
Yeah. Okay. See you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.